I'd like to call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:35 a.m. on Wednesday, March 16th, 2005. Let the record reflect that there is a quorum. Present are Co-Chair Thomas, myself, Representative Ledoux, Representative Elkins, and Representative Wilson. On our agenda this morning is SB 25, sponsored by Senators Elkin and Gary Stevens. Also, HB 218, sponsored by Representative Thomas. And also on the agenda, but not going to be heard until next week, is HB 192, also referred to as the Bad People Bill from last week. At this time, I'd like to invite Senator Elkin forward to present SB 25. And did I say Elkin rather than Elkin? And if I did, I apologize.
Everybody does, madam. I'm presenting the Bad Fish Bill to the committee. And first of all, I want to thank the co-chairs and the members of the committee for hearing the bill so quickly. It has just recently arrived in your body, and I appreciate the quick response. I'm not going to speak an awful lot about the bill. It's fairly self-explanatory. I'll just give a brief overview and then try to answer any questions that you might have. And I'm presenting the bill on behalf of myself and the co-prime sponsor, Senator Gary Stevens, and a staff person of his is here if you have any questions of him. The bill is a work product of the Joint Fisheries Committee that the legislature had a couple of years ago. It was passed out of that body unanimously, was introduced at the end of last session, didn't quite make it all the way, so is back in front of us today, and it's in the exact same form. What it does is it provides that genetically modified fish that are sold in the state of Alaska at the retail level will have to be noticed on label that it is a GM fish. I'm using the polite name for these fish, Madam Co-Chair. The other name for them is Frankenfish, because it involves a modification at the genetic level that can't occur naturally. At present, there is only one GM modified fish that is allowed in the marketplace, and that's a glow-in-the-dark aquarium fish. But there is an application pending in front of the FDA for GM modified Atlantic salmon. There is a U.S.-Canadian company that right now is working to establish at some salmon farms in Nova Scotia GM modified Atlantic salmon. They would put the Atlantic salmon not only into the marketplace, but they would distribute the eggs worldwide to other farms, industrial salmon farms. There isn't an awful lot, Madam Chair, that Alaska can do when it comes to regulating the global trade in genetically modified fish. But what this bill does is provide, if those genetically modified fish or shellfish are sold in Alaska, the Alaska consumers will know what they're buying. It also has an ancillary benefit that it provides a very bright line between Alaska's wild salmon and industrially produced Atlantic salmon. With that, Madam Chair, I'm going to end my testimony by just noting that last week's Alaska Fish Report by Lainey Welch, she had talked to Aqua Bounty, who is the company with the pending application before FDA, and she was told by company officials that they expect that they'll get a permit within the next year for GM modified Atlantic salmon. With that, I'll try and answer any questions the committee might have.
Anybody have any questions? Representative Wilson, and I'd also like to acknowledge that Representative Katz has joined us.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It says here in your information that the European Union, Japan, New Zealand, and Australia already make that differentiation between natural and genetically modified. So I think it's really important that we follow through and do this. It just preserves how the status of our natural wild salmon. So I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I appreciate that comment, Representative Wilson. I do want to point out that they make the distinction on vegetable products, and I don't think they yet do it on fish products. I'll have to double check, but It could be that it's all GM-modified food, but I'll double-check for you. But again, the representative has pointed out something that's very important. It's a, you know, at its heart, this is a consumer notification bill.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Chair. Chairman LeDoux. Senator, on page 4, line 4, you refer to finfish or shellfish whose genetic structure has been altered, but the title doesn't reflect anything about shellfish. I was just reading the title. Is that... Should it, or?
It's a good question, Mr. Chair, and I'll check. I think in statute elsewhere, fish as is described as an all and kind of an umbrella term, but I'll double check for you.
Okay.
It's the first time that question has been asked in two legislative sessions now. But I'll double check for you.
As a shrimp fisherman, you know, in knowing that the Vietnamese and other people are raising shrimp, that it's a question.
Okay. I'll double check for you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the senator? Any public testimony? We've got off-net Dennis Kelso. Dennis, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Good.
You want
Thank
to
you, Madam
identify
Chair.
Yourself for the record and state who you're testifying on behalf of?
My name is Dennis Kelso, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself. I'm a faculty member at the University of California, Santa Cruz. My research is on the impacts of salmon farming on the wild salmon sector, in particular Alaska salmon, and on the implications of genetically engineered fish in commercial aquaculture. I will be very brief. The sponsor and you have also been very clear, and I think that the points you raise are appropriate for this bill. I believe the bill is an important consumer choice opportunity. Fish are subject to a great deal of research right now with respect to making genetically engineered versions. And the reason is that they're relatively easy to work with. They have a short generation time. The eggs are easy to manipulate. And so there are a number of species that are being worked with. The example that Senator Elton mentioned is the one that's currently proposed for Food and Drug Administration approval, and that's an Atlantic salmon that's basically constructed from genetic material taken from an Atlantic salmon, from the ocean pout, which is a cold water North Atlantic fish, and king salmon, which supplies growth hormone DNA. The claim of the owners of the patent on this fish is that it will reduce the production time for Atlantic salmon in commercial salmon farms by roughly half, the idea being that it would reduce the producers' costs and allow them to put more Atlantic salmon on the market faster. So the bill before you actually provides consumers a choice by informing them so that they know what kind of production methods they're actually supporting through their purchases. And for that reason, it seems to me a very useful piece of legislation and one that deserves your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Professor Kelso? Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Professor, it's very interesting to me, the research that you're doing, and can you leave your address or at least your email so I can get in touch with you later?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. I can leave it either with the committee staff or with Senator Elton's staff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any further public testimony? Well, not seeing any further public testimony, can I have a motion to move SB 25? Representative Wilson.
Yes, I move Senate Bill number 25, version A, with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Any objection? Then that bill will be moved out of committee. Thank you. Next on the agenda is HB 218, and I'd like to invite Ian Fisk forward to present this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas, and I'm here to present HB 218 to the committee. First of all, let me start by saying that the state's hatchery program is one of the best examples of economic development, you know, assisted by the state. And there are 29 private nonprofit hatcheries statewide. They produce over 50 million fish that were harvested in 2003. And this accounts for about a third of the statewide harvest by volume and about a quarter of the statewide harvest by value. There were 481,000 hatchery fish that were caught by sport fishermen in the year 2003, and this program employs hundreds of Alaskans. It's truly been a very successful program. What we're here to discuss today is the method by which hatcheries recover their costs. And cost recovery is currently done by a system whereby hatcheries contract with certain processors, and the processor, through a bid process, is selected, and very few fishing vessels actually participate in the harvest. Now, there's different hatcheries that have different circumstances by which they actually recover their costs, and what this bill will do is it will provide permissive language that will allow them to harvest to make more fish available to common property harvest. In section 2 of the bill, you'll see that there's permissive language, and this is one of the keys to House Bill 218. It specifies that a hatchery permit holder may harvest salmon for a facility in a special harvest area through agents, contractees, or employees of the permit holder as provided under regulations of the Board of Fisheries or through common property fisheries under this section. The remainder of the bill sets out the process by which rates will be set for the common property cost recovery fishery. It specifies that, as the bill currently reads, that the Department of Revenue will annually, in conjunction with permit holders and the department and hatchery permit holders, affected fishermen, and they will consult, set the rate for the cost recovery harvest, and they'll collect and distribute the funds. I'd also like to point out in section 2 that the regulations to govern this cost recovery fishery will be set out by both the Department of Fish and Game and, in certain circumstances, by the Board of Fish. The Board of Fish, it will be involved if there's anything that will alter allocation plans that allocate fish between different user groups. In subsection C, there's language that sets out that a fisherman who participates in the fishery agrees to the payment of the assessment. And so that there'll be a method by which, as I stated just a minute ago, the assessment will be determined annually. And that's to give some flexibility because of changing market circumstances. I skipped over the section 1 of the bill, and I'd like to reiterate the findings. Section 1 states that the Alaska State Legislature finds that the economic interests of the commercial salmon fishery are best served by the harvest of salmon returning to private nonprofit hatcheries in common property fisheries, and the reduction or elimination of the direct sale of salmon by hatchery permit holders, especially when all fisheries enhancement loan obligations incurred for a hatchery facility have been repaid. So that's one of the most important parts of the bill, stating the policy of the legislature. At this point, I'll entertain any questions of the committee. Thank you.
Representative Emkins.
Thank you. Ian, I just got one question. If a fisherman exports his own fish, how do you know you're going to get your money?
through the chair, Representative Elkins. The enforcement details of this bill are something that still need to be worked out, and that's why the intent is to simply hear the bill today. There's a provision near the end of the bill, I believe it's Section 3, that states that violations of this bill, this law, will be a Class A misdemeanor, and that's commensurate with other fishing violations that are currently in statute, and that's a fairly serious penalty.
Any other questions for Mr. Fisk? Is there any public testimony?
Madam Chair?
Yes, I think I've got people in the audience and online.
I'm sorry. I'll wait my turn.
Okay, I've got from Kenai, Gary Fandari. Mr. Fandari, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Do you want to state your name and who you're representing?
My name is Gary Fandari. I'm the executive director of the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association. To introduce that, I'd like to say that we have not, as an organization, reviewed this bill. So I guess I'm here primarily speaking for myself with the context that I am familiar with the cost recovery program at the Aquaculture Association. I'd like to make three major points regarding this particular bill. First of all, I applaud the concept. I think this is something that some members of the fleet have expressed an interest in. It is also something that we have looked at a number of times, but we haven't quite been able to figure out how to make it work. Having said that, I'm not sure that this bill does it either. Another point I'd like to make is the bill seems to encourage loans in that it does not allow for the development of any type of a reserve associated with the facility. In other words, if you come up short on your cost recovery 1 year and you don't have money someplace else, you're going to have to go out and get a loan to make that project work for that year. The last thing I'd like to say on the major points is that the option to use this type of cost recovery strategy, I feel, must be at the initiative or the option of the hatchery operator. I'd hate to get into a position where we're forced into doing something like this because it may not work in all situations. A couple of minor points. For this to work for the hatcheries, I think in some instances, we may need to redefine our cost recovery harvest areas. So that should be something that people should be aware of. And the question, I have also have a question on how buyers will keep up with the assessment program. It seems a little bit cumbersome to be dealing with an assessment program that's going to vary area by area and year to year. And also, a last comment I would make is that the 40% assessment rate probably is a fairly reasonable rate to be dealing with. We have looked at our programs, and that 40% rate represents a 1 to 2.5 cost-benefit ratio, and that is pretty reasonable for many of the programs that we do. We're usually in that 1 to 3 to 1 to 6 cost-benefit ratio with most of the programs that we run. That's all I have, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Fandari? Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Yes, I have several questions. One is, what's the makeup of your board? Is it commercial fishermen or is it a mom and pop?
We are a regional association, and we have a number of commercial fishermen on the board, and we also have representatives from the local communities, the borough, a number of other groups in the area, such as the SERI and organizations like that.
Okay, question number two is, when you have put your cost recovery out to bid, do you get more for your bid for your fish than the common property fishermen get, or do they get more?
On the average, we probably get a little bit less, and that's because many instances in Cook Inlet, our cost recovery programs are set up where we are the last ones in line. In other words, the commercial fishery goes first, and if there's anything left on some of these programs, we're allowed to cost recover those fish, and we don't really have predefined set goals for some of them. So on the average, we probably do a little bit less than the fleet because they tend to be a little bit more mature.
Okay, what fish do you produce then?
Right now, we are producing only for commercial harvest sockeye. We also produce coho for the sport harvest in a couple of areas in the Cook Inlet area.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm looking at Section 2 as the new section relating to the cost recovery of the fisheries, and I'm looking at that, and it definitely is permissive. I think I see the word may 5 times, so it's definitely permissive.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Fandery?
I have one more.
Okay.
Is that who formed your association? Was it commercial gilliners? Was it sport fishermen? Who formed and petitioned and did the election to form your association?
It was formed by the commercial fishing industry.
Okay. And so your goal then is to produce more fish for the common property fishermen?
Our goal is to produce fish for the common property fishermen. We don't necessarily recognize any particular user group in establishing that goal, but the reality of it is our income comes from the commercial fishing industry.
So then I guess my question is, why would anybody have problems with giving more fish to the common property fishery if they were the original people who started the, I know you said it was a good concept and good start. I guess I'm just wondering why, if the fishermen started, they should be excluded from trying to harvest more of the fish. It's, you know, and I've just been watching. I'm a commercial fisherman myself, so I guess it's just a comment why they shouldn't catch more of it.
Yeah, well, that is our goal. Whenever we're trying to do a common property fishery, is to try to get the best price we can for our fish so that we can get the greatest number of fish back into the common property hands.
Good answer. You're doing a good job.
Any further questions? Okay, next we'll go to Valdez, Jason Wells.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, co-chairs and legislators. My name is Jason Wells. I'm a lifelong Alaskan with 42 years of experience in the fishing industry. Worked with a private nonprofit hatchery system for 26 years. My current position is executive director of Valdez Fishery Development, a position I've held for 18 years.
Excuse me, Mr. Wells, are you representing Valdez Hatchery today?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
I've reviewed several drafts of HB 218, what's become 218, and in each version, the findings in Section 1 have remained unchanged. I feel that these findings are inaccurate and set a bad precedent for the PNP hatchery system. Valdez Fisheries Development conduct pre-season sales agreements with two strong buyers with whom we have developed long track records. In the past 11 years, despite the bad pricing, we've managed to save $10 million or 86 million pounds of pink salmon by selling our cost recovery above the grounds price. The aforementioned savings have been returned to the common property fishery via their catch. As you can see, there is a significant economic interest in the hatchery conducting its own cost recovery and conducting direct sales. The hatchery preseason sales contracts are the last vestige of competition between processors to purchase Alaska salmon. The fishermen no longer have viable organizations to put upward pressure on grounds price. My major problem with this legislation is the issue of whether it is voluntary on the part of hatchery operators or whether it will morph into a mandatory program. Our corporation, through the board of directors, is obligated to the state of Alaska for loan repayment. We're obligated to our personnel, properties, and to several small businesses. These obligations have been made under a set of assumptions, the assumptions being that we remain in control of our revenue stream. If this legislation hinders our ability to perform our fiduciary responsibility, it needs to have a fiscal note attached. The board of directors of private nonprofit hatchery corporations must be allowed to choose this legislation to use this legislation or not. Further, if a PNP elects to investigate a common property fishery for cost recovery, and it cannot negotiate agreements suitable to the corporation's financial responsibilities, there must be a back-out mechanism. If the bill remains voluntary to PNP hatchery permit holders, there are still several problems with HB 218. The first is that the Department of Safety must be committed to fish hold inspections and to show up for each and every common property fishery in the special harvest area. Our experience is that fisheries on enhanced stocks are not high on the Department of Safety's priority list. Secondly, on page 2, lines 16 through 18, not all buyers or processors pay for the fish upon which they write fish tickets. How will the state ensure that the hatchery gets paid for its fish, and in what time frame will those payments be made? Third, this legislation requires the Department of Revenue to set a rate of harvest prior to the season. Our experience is that there are too many variables, such as fish size, grounds price, exploitation rates of the common property fishery, and ocean survivals, to make accurate preseason estimates of harvest. The problem has resulted in VFDA managing cost recovery towards a dollar goal, not a poundage goal or an exploitation rate. We have been doing this since 1988 with good success. I doubt that the Department of Revenue will be better at predicting salmon returns than ADF&G, who've thrown their hands up and no longer make run predictions on hatchery stocks. Finally, this legislation limits the assessment rate to 40% of the run. What mechanism is in place to ensure that the hatchery continues to operate should we have a run failure and all of the return is needed to cover your hatchery operations expenses? HB 218 is a conflict.
Excuse me, Mr. Wells, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up your testimony. Perhaps if you've got something written or can write something, you can send it to the committee members.
I do have, may I give you one more paragraph and I'll be quiet?
Sure.
House Bill 218
Short is paragraph.
A complex piece of legislation with many possible unintended consequences. This legislation requires consultation with PNP operators before it is rushed through. I think the intent of HB 218 would be better handled in the private nonprofit boardroom by the fishermen. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And again, I would recommend that you send your written testimony to the committee. Thanks very much. Next, we've got Mike Round from Ketchikan. Mr. Round, do you want to state who you're representing?
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Mike Round. I'm the Assistant General Manager for Southern Southeast Regional Agriculture Association. And our concerns parallel both Jason and Gary's comments. We do see this as, we are not opposed to the bill. We see this as just one of many options that a hatchery operator could use. We do not at this time and are not likely in the future to change the way we do business in cost recovery. And we've found, just like Gary Fondre has, that we can minimize our cost recovery by maximizing the value of our fish. One of the things Southeast Regional Agriculture does is to make sure that those fish do not compete with the fishermen's fish at the dock. We retain those fish and sell them into the market well beyond the local processor point, so that it does not compete with the commercial fishermen's catch at the dock and has very little, if any, effect on the fluctuation of the price to the fishermen. But we see this as the possibility of a just another option that the hatcheries should have, not only may elect to choose, but should also be able to choose to drop it at any point where it does not any longer make sense. Some of the requirements by the bill or some of the aspects of the bill seem to make it sound as if any time you have a special harvest area open to the common property fishery, that all gear holders may attend that fishery. certainly there are special harvest areas that would preclude the total fleet from going in there to catch it. They just don't have the makeup of the special harvest area would not allow it. So we have the same concerns that both Jason Wells and Gary Fondre has. We are not opposed to the bill as long as it is just an option and does not morph into some kind of requirement further down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Again, you know, you heard my questioning the individual from Cook Inlet. Who formed the your corporation? Again, was it sports fishermen or subsistence fishermen or the commercial fishermen?
Through the chair, the commercial fishing industry formed our agriculture association. Our board is still made up majority of the board members are commercial fishermen. 13 of the 21 member board are commercial fishermen and permit holders.
Right. And the idea was to, provide more fish for the common property fishermen, yes or no?
Yes, that's correct. The ultimate goal is that 75% of our production would be intercepted in the common property fishery, leaving 25% to come back to the hatchery for cost recovery operations. However, that also assumes that all things being equal, our debts are paid down. We have our reserves fully funded. There are a lot of other considerations, but that is our ultimate goal. Okay.
Okay. So, what are your percentages? It's one that's been a, you know, kind of heartburn for several fishermen. What are your actual percentages? I know 25, 75 is supposed to be the goal. So, what have you been getting? Is it more like 60, 40 for the hatchery, 40 for common property, or is it, you know?
Well, obviously it fluctuates year to year, and certainly lately by the amount of participation in some of the fisheries will cause it to fluctuate. But I'd say it right now is fluctuating around the 60-40, 60% to the fishermen, 40% to the hatchery.
Oh, that's kind of amazing. The other question I had is I understood, you know, for years, because you put a lot of pressure on the north here, that Ketchikan, right, South Sarah was doing all cost recovery in the area where you could add rotation to fishery, and that wasn't occurring because of your debt. It was that correct, or am I just was that just fleet talk?
Well, there's no question that Sarah has debt that it has to pay down, and that paying the bills is certainly a one of the primary, obviously the major factor in cost recovery operations. When we were allowed to, when we did get a loan from the Sustainable Salmon Fund, we used that money from the Sustainable Salmon Fund to buy time in the common property fishery in the special harvest area to do gear rotation. We do try to get the benefits of hatchery production back to the fishermen as we are able, depending upon our economic circumstances.
I guess you didn't answer that, but you know what happened is as a gill knitter for 36 years up here and helping with the hatchery programs up here, when you went into, I call it major cost recovery there, you shifted the gillnet fleet from Ketchikan to Taku and to Haines and to Sitka and actually took my earnings, well, you filled your coffers, I would put it, to pay off your debt and left me hanging out here with an extra 100 to 150 boats or more. Because they were displaced, and I see some people nodding in the audience, but you know, we felt the impact while you were harvesting to repay your debt while we incurred more debt, and I don't think that's totally fair, but I know your situation and I know how your debt is, but I just wanted to make a point that I just for years had heard the rumor that you were total cost recovery, and I hear you now that you're not, so that's good.
Well, through the chair, just to reply, in the past, we have received as much as $1.5 million and $2 million on the enhancement tax. And even though the enhancement tax we receive is considerably reduced, I think this year's was around $300,000. The benefit to the fishermen is still about 3 to 1, three times the amount of fish have been caught, the value for what he pays in enhancement tax. We would like to do better, certainly, but it still is providing a good benefit to the commercial fishermen. Thank you.
Yeah, just one more comment then is I was very instrumental with the DIPAC hatchery up here going way back and helping Lad McCauley start that. And when we were looking at it, we were getting like 60 to 80 cents a pound for a dog. So we ran projections at that. Now we're getting 12. And a lot of the hatcheries, in your cost recovery, you get probably 22 cents and 23. And do you know why processors are willing to pay you more for your fish than they are to the people who created these fish?
Through the chair, to Representative Thomas, we at SARA do not sell our fish. Well, you know, I should step back a little bit, but actually, it's without exception. We do not sell our fish to the local processors, period. We retain our cost recovery fish and sell them into the world market at a point beyond the dock, the processors of the local dock. So what we get for our fish is evident by we go through the processing of the fish, freeze the fish, retain the fish, and sell them through a broker. We do not sell our fish locally to the processors unless we have a run above and beyond our means to deal with at the cost recovery site, in which case it goes out for second place processing, and they would bid on the fish at that point. But that hasn't occurred in a few years anyway. We usually do not receive a higher price in that case. There might be exceptions to that, but for most part, our operations and cost recovery are done in-house and processed and sold into the market well above the point of the local processes and the dockside price.
So. Okay, I'll let it go.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Okay, then we will go to Deborah Lyons from Sitka. Ms. Lyons?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity to testify to the committee. My name is Deborah Lyons. I'm the Secretary Treasurer for the NSRA Board of Directors, and our board is currently meeting here in Sitka, but I thought it'd be good just to come and hear what is about this bill. We just looked at this in our board meeting yesterday. We haven't yet been able to completely evaluate what it means to the association. I do concur with a number of the statements that have already been made by representatives of the other aquaculture associations and PNPs. It's so complicated, this bill, that we're not sure really what it means. And the findings concern me that the legislature would make such a statement as is in the findings. Our aquaculture association is sort of like the state in that if we could run everything off of taxes off of a resource, like the state runs off taxes off of oil, if we could just exist solely on the enhancement tax that fishermen make, it'd be great. We wouldn't have to do any cost recovery. But you know that tax values fluctuate with the value of your commodity resource. And we couldn't build an operations budget and maintain it solely on those tax revenues. So there arose the need for the cost recovery fisheries. And I don't want to take too long, but I think this legislation grew out of some dissatisfaction at a certain fishery, and that's the Hidden Falls seine fishery. And I think fishermen should be maybe a little more patient. We have to take chum salmon aren't very valuable compared to Chinook and coho. And the chum salmon fishery, we have to take a large number of chum salmon to meet the cost recovery needs to balance the budget. But this year, you know, a great development is seeing our coho and Chinook programs come online, and the value of those fish as they enter into cost recovery. This year, the total cost recovery, 25% of that value came from the coho and Chinook programs. And as those mature, there will be less chum salmon that need to be taken. And Hidden Falls seine fishermen have been before our board with three different proposals to change the way cost recovery is done in that particular fishery. I believe this legislation is directed towards ENSRA because of the language about the debt. And I think you are wading into a little bit of a fish fight. And I've seen a few of them, having served on the Board of Fisheries and the Pacific Lands Commission. So I'm just saying, please be very careful as you develop this legislation. Realize there are a lot of dynamics behind why it is being presented to you. And please be very, look at this language and the findings and realize it is perhaps not good public policy for the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Yes, Deborah Lane. Are you a fisherman?
Yeah, I fished for many years with my husband. Currently, I just pretty much go out as a crew member. We have a troller longliner, but I served on the State Board of Fisheries for 4 years and on the Pacific Salmon Commission representing the troll fishery. I work with most of the guys who developed this bill that's in front of you.
Yeah, I figured that you must have been a troller because of your comments about the value of the dogs not being worth anything. I'll let you know that I've picked 60,000 to 70,000 pounds of dogs in 2 to 3 days, and to me, that is money fish. When you know, even at the meager 20 cents a pound, you're able to make $10,000 in 3 days, and I think that's a misstatement to say that the dogs weren't money fish. I think it depends on the volume that you catch and to who. So when you catch versus king salmon and cohos, so we're not going to get into the philosophical arguments. But again, and then one more question, and I'll quit because you've heard the questions that I've asked of these people. But does ENSRA have a reserve account, and how much is it if they do?
Yes, we've followed the example of the state of Alaska by trying to create our own type of a fund that could sustain us. We have a... The board set a goal of reserving $4 million, which we haven't attained yet for our operational reserve. That idea was that it could cover all the costs of the operation if there was some catastrophic failure of return of the fisheries. And in establishing reserve accounts, we feel like we are protecting the organization and the interests of the commercial fishermen by being fiscally responsible in that way. So we have about $3.2 million in that operational reserve. Our goal is to put $4 million in it. We had a financial advisor come to us and tell us we really need to be saving for our capital projects. We need a capital replacement fund. We have a little over $1 million in that, but we were advised that with the value of the facilities there, we would be wise to fund that at a much higher level. We have a scholarship account that's about $100,000.
And I just, you know, I hear the fishermen on the board claim more than $10 million on that. But, I'm not going to get, no arguments here about this. We wanted to hear it. I evidently, it was, four hatcheries. Wasn't willing to talk, so I'll let it go and take my frustration out in the office.
Well, with great respect to the people who are sitting there working on this in the legislature, I didn't mean to devalue anyone's fishery. I just meant comparatively the values of the fish. I'm certainly not demeaning the chum salmon. My goodness, they've paid for every program. They're wonderful fish. But the point I was trying to make is that as we're able to sell more of these coho and chinook that are coming online, more of the chums will be available in the common property for the fishermen.
Madam Co-Chair, one more question for everybody that's listening as a request, and you can send it in if you wish or not. But I will request from all the people who testified and who are with hatchery organizations to send me a list of what your cost recovery receipts were per pound versus common property fishery. And I want to see if you're really there for the fishermen or where you're there for. It's just, I've heard fish prices, we get 18 cents in the process, and the hatcheries are getting 32. And I'm trying to figure out why if cost recovery in the same fishery, and let's say in Hidden Falls are both same fisheries, why the big gap in the price. So anyway, if people can do that, if you don't wish to, that's fine, but, you know, we'll find it somehow, some way. But I want to see what the differential is in the spread, and I think that's kind of important as to why trying to get more fish to the common property. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Anybody in the audience wishing to testify?
Co-chairs Ledoux and Thomas, members of the committee, my name is Rob Zawanich. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Same Boat Owners here in Juneau, and we strongly support House Bill 218. I'll strive for brevity. I certainly heard a number of the comments here today, and I think you well know that any time you have change, there's anxiety and perhaps even some unfounded paranoia. In essence, what this bill does is that when a hatchery permit holder deems it appropriate, and I emphasize, when the hatchery permit holder deems it appropriate, revenue heretofore generated in cost recovery fisheries could be substituted by an assessment on salmon landed in specified regions set by the hatchery operator. Pure and simple. There may be wordsmithing that needs to get everyone on the same page, but at the end of the day, this legislation, as it sets, has the appropriate checks and balances for the hatcheries to satisfy their fiduciary obligations and chart a better course for Alaska's commercial fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Do you long line?
No, I don't. Alaska Same Boat Owners is about 70% same fleet, probably about 10-15% longliners, and the balance miscellaneous.
Okay, and may a statement is that as a longliner, I held with gillnet shrimp, that at the end of each year, was it RAM's division sends me an assessment for managing that fishery for them, and I get a bill each year, and it's around, I'm going to guess total is around $1,300 assessment, and it's based on the value of the fish, based on their projection for the year for their budget, and I don't hear anybody crying about that. So I'm just, you know, I guess it's kind of tracks for the information of the committee members here, that kind of philosophy and that idea.
Yes, yes.
And we don't see no cost recovery fishery in the longline fishery.
And as I mentioned, I think change is always difficult, but I'm quite confident when this can be implemented, people will see the value of it, and it'll be a template for hopefully other hatcheries to follow. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you. Any other people in the audience?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chairman Thomas, committee members, Bob Thorstensen, Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Seiners Association. We strongly support this legislation. I guess I could address a couple of the concerns that I'd heard about it. We had a pretty thorough vetting at United Fishermen of Alaska. In my volunteer job, I'm not here representing United Fishermen of Alaska, but I'm also president of UFA, and we had a beginning of the vetting 3 weeks ago. And thank you, Mr. Fandry from Kenai, and Mr. Wells from Valdez, and Mr. Round from Ketchikan, and Deborah Lyons from Sitka, for weighing in. I think that some of the concerns you had is whether it's permissive, whether the hatchery is going to be forced into this type of situation. It's not our intent at all. I believe the language reflects that. It's not the chairman's intent. We support his intent. We support this entire piece of legislation. If there's got to be a few bugs worked out, it's really going to have to be worked out through the chair who sponsored this. But we'd be willing to help. And I do work with all the folks that have been testifying today. And we'll work together. I think this is going to be a very progressive piece of legislation. It's very, you know, the old adage, the tool in the toolbox, you know, it really is one, that, because it's not by itself. You pass this piece of legislation, you can't create anything. I mean, the hatchery has to sit down and wrestle with regulations and figure it out from that end. The enforcement concerns that I've heard, I believe, are going to be very easily addressed. The idea that this might be bad public policy, I guess some of those types of strong statements, I can't really speak to those, but I believe it will be good public policy. the assessment, the way it's going to be collected. There's a few other mechanisms that I believe will need some work, but I can't think of a more qualified person to be dealing with this and leading in this type of legislation than Chairman Thomas, and also his fishery staff, who I believe is some of the best, probably the best fishery staff, or one of the best fishery staffers we have in the state. So that's all I have, and I'm open for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much. Well, we're not...
Closing comments?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for hearing the bill, and I think after listening to this that anybody interested in trying to work with us and trying to change and massage this length of bill, contact Ian at 465-3732, and then we'll see who's serious about working with this or not, and we'll ask for a hearing after we have a workshop here with the individuals concerned.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. Show me in the bill what they're talking about, the language about the debt, and then what exactly it means, because I want to make sure I understand this.
When all fisheries enhancement loan obligations incurred for a hatchery facility have been repaid, is in the findings?
I should have asked what she was referring to when she said that.
Well, it's my understanding, you know, are we in the committee?
Yes,
okay,
we're in the committee.
It's my understanding that NCRA is one of the few hatcheries that have probably zero debt. And so that's why I'm wondering why they're concerned about enhancement debt, unless they're looking to obligate the fishermen to build another hatchery or something. But right now, as far as I know, they're pretty much debt free.
Go into with me, especially if when all fisheries enhancement loan obligations occurred for the hatchery facility have been repaid. So what do they do when they don't have a bill anymore? Do they don't have to worry about this, or how does that work?
Well, typically, I think when they have cost recovery fishery, this to build the reserves for the next year or to pay for the debt for that year. You know, several other hatcheries I know will continue. Their debt is so huge that they need to take every fish they can. Again, going back to when you project, when we built the hatcheries, a lot of the hatcheries were built pre-88. In 88, we had maybe we got $3.80 a pound for dogs, for sockeye, a dollar for pinks, and like $1 something for dogs. So everybody built hatcheries based on 80 cent price for dogs, and then they dropped to, I think we went as low as 12 cents here not too long ago. And I think maybe the hatcheries got 16 cents or 18 cents, and so that's, you build a $25 million facility and you don't even make enough money to pay back your debt. And that's the pickle the hatcheries got in, and that's where the fishermen came down with them. It's kind of like a big fall altogether. And a lot of the fishermen have been thrown out because they can't afford to make their payments. I've made as little as $23,000 gill netting, and that's how bad fishing has been, and that's fishing almost all summer. So, you know, I was glad I was diversified into the halibut fishery, otherwise I'd never have made it. And last year was a little better year, only because we had some better fish prices, and they opened some areas that were depressed in Haines previously, you know, so.
Any further questions, comments? Well, I've actually have one. I'm curious about, well, I haven't said okay. Anything all meeting. Why some of the hatcheries are selling their fish above the market price, and then you had that problem in Bristol Bay where the cost recovery system was really driving the prices down. Do you know the answer to that?
No, that one is, and it's, I don't know. I think it's, the only thing I could figure when I'm sitting here listening to the why the hatcheries got more than gill netters and the seiners is tender fee costs. They only have to send one big tender to a cost recovery area and haul out 1 million pounds, whereas when you serve a gillnet fishery, you'll have as many as 4 tenders to pack maybe with 110,000 pounds a day or something, and they're rotating back and forth. So they have tender fee costs in there and are higher, so they pay less and they send one tender in there and they get 700,000-800,000 pounds. I've known of one seiner here that got 1 million pounds in one day, so in the cost recovery fishery. So, you know, it's, I think people look at that and they say, well, we should spread that around you know. But I think it's the savings to the processors. It has to be.
Okay, well, we're not going to move this out of committee today, and there not being any further business, the meeting's adjourned. It is 9:30.
Thank you.